This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. Well, we've reported it, and you've probably seen it in other places as well, that the upcoming winter heating season may be the most expensive for Hoosiers in several years, which means that consumers should be preparing now. And let's find out one way, or several ways, actually, that we can do so. Anthony Swinger is a spokesperson for the Indiana Office of Utility Consumer Counselor, and he brings us up to date on a number of issues that involve utilities of all types here in Indiana. And he's back with us this time to talk about winter heating season. Anthony, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me on, Chris.
Well, it may be a case where you've already had the heat on in your house or wherever you work, and it's certainly just a sign, of course, that winter will be here, officially anyway. What are some of the things that the OUCC has learned from the regulators and other sources as to how this year's winter heating season is going to shape up?
Well, we are aware, certainly, that this could be the most expensive heating season in some time. It's really market-driven. This is not an issue that is isolated to Indiana or to any one utility. The natural gas utilities throughout Indiana and our neighboring states and beyond buy their gas in a competitive wholesale market. And we have procedures in place at the state government level to make sure that utilities recover the gas costs on a dollar-for-dollar basis, that they're shopping prudently in the market, and that they're not profiting from the cost pass-throughs. Having said that, though, the market prices themselves are significantly higher now than they were at this time a year ago. If you look at what happened in February with the cold snap that hit Texas and caused some real supply and demand issues there in February, that really had an impact on the market. And so the higher market costs are a challenge for gas utilities throughout the country, and they're likely to lead to higher bills this coming winter. All of the major natural gas utilities in Indiana issued their projections for the winter about 2 or 3 weeks ago. The projections, of course, are projections. They're snapshots in time. They assume average weather, and they're based on the information the utilities have at the time. But all of the projections are pointing to higher bills this winter, which is why folks need to be taking steps now, both thinking about their bills and thinking about energy efficiency around the home.
We know that it's all because of, as you mentioned earlier, about being market-driven, and it's a very, very competitive market, as we've seen in years past, but even more so this year, isn't it?
Yes, again, you're talking about a wholesale competitive market where all gas utilities make their purchases. Each utility has its own strategies when it comes to mitigating volatility, hedging contracts, putting gas in storage. It gets very, very complicated when you get into the weeds. But to look at it from the 40, 50,000 foot level, it's about shopping prudently in that competitive market. But remembering, it is a market-driven cost in the end, and utilities are allowed to recover those costs, and that's why it's important for folks to prepare now. And, you know, interestingly enough, Chris, with today being November 1st, that technically is the first day of the winter heating season.
Mm-hmm. Will you go first through the list of things that consumers need to know if they have problems trying to cover their bills, particularly with such a stiff heating season as is going to shape up to be? What should Hoosiers and particularly us here in Northwest Indiana do if we have issues with being able to pay our bills when it comes time to paying that heating bill this year?
The first thing that we would recommend for all consumers is look seriously at your utility's budget plan. If you go on the budget billing plan, which all natural gas and most electric utilities in Indiana offer, you will end up paying the same amount over the long run, but what happens when you go on the budget plan is the utility estimates your usage over the next year and sets an amount that you will pay that will be consistent each month. If you get on the budget billing plan, you will know with certainty when the bill comes in the mail how much you can expect to pay for that given month. And being able to level out those costs through the winter can be very helpful for the consumer, and it's very important to have that stability that plan brings. So that's first and foremost is what we would recommend for everyone. Now, if you're concerned about the ability to pay the bill on time and in full, if you're facing financial hardship, it's important now to speak up, make the utility aware of your situation, see about making a payment arrangement that you can afford. It's important for consumers to let utilities know about these situations sooner rather than later. The other element is seeking assistance. If you call 211, that will connect you to the statewide helpline. Again, just dial the three digits, 211. That will connect you to the statewide helpline where you can get connected to resources for financial assistance in the event you need them. That, of course, includes the Low-Income Home Energy Assistance Program, which is taking applications now.
Mm-hmm. Will you tell us more about the Low-Income Home Energy Assistance Program, LIHEAP as it's sometimes called. It's the abbreviation for it. How it got started and what here in Indiana is something that Hoosiers really, if they are having trouble, should really count on.
LIHEAP has been around for a number of years. It is a federal program. It's administrated at the local level, in most places by community action agencies, but in some counties, other organizations are in charge of distributing the funds. The funds come from the federal government to the Indiana Housing and Community Development Authority, which then distributes them to the local providers in all 92 counties. Each Indiana county has a community action agency or another local provider that handles LIHEAP applications. It's important in part because of the financial assistance that it provides. The other part is that Indiana has a moratorium on winter gas and electric disconnections, but it only applies under certain circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
Under state law, a gas or electric utility may not shut a customer off between December 1st and March 15th if, and this is a very important if the customer is receiving assistance through LIHEAP, or if the consumer has applied for LIHEAP assistance, has been determined to be eligible, and the provider, the assistance agency, makes the utility aware that that customer is eligible and has qualified. It's only under those circumstances the disconnection moratorium applies. So again, it's really important if you qualify or think you may qualify, make that contact and do that sooner rather than later.
Mm-hmm. Where does the role of township trustees fit into all of this? Because you say it's a lot of it is determined by individual counties. Maybe some kind of a program is set up by an individual county. But when you get even closer to home, to the township trustee level, where do they fit into all this?
Township trustees provide assistance as well. The exact parameters of that are going to vary from township to township. But in addition to contacting 211, contacting your township trustee is another important call to make if you're concerned about your ability to pay on time and in full.
Mm-hmm.
Utilities themselves often have assistance funds. The only way to find out about that and potentially tap into that is to contact the utility and ask. The other element, though, goes back to calling 211 because the folks who work with the state helpline at 211 can put you in touch or make you aware of local options for financial assistance, which, of course, may include the township trustee, may include religious organizations, nonprofit organizations, but they're the ones who are best suited to make you aware of what's available locally. And again, calling sooner rather than later is going to work to your advantage.
We're talking with Anthony Swinger. He's spokesperson for the Indiana Office of Utility Consumer Counselor based in Indianapolis about the issues, of course, making sure that the heat stays on for Hoosiers and regardless of whether you need some help financially or whether that you can take care of the bill as it comes up every month. You probably, if you haven't had your home checked out to be sure that it's going to save money one way or the other, this is the time to do so. Anthony, what ways do Hoosiers have to be able to make sure that their home is up to snuff, so to speak, to be able to make sure that heating system is going to work efficiently and safely and in turn save you money during the winter months?
We recommend getting a tune-up on your home heating system before each winter. I think this time it's more important than usual to get that tune-up. It's not only a safety issue, but it's an efficiency issue. Mm-hmm. The less stress, the less strain there is on the furnace, the less hard it has to work to produce the heat that you need. So if you've not had a tune-up in some time, it's especially important to get that done. Get it done by a professional. Another thing to keep in mind is the insulation in your home. If you've not checked the insulation in your attic in several years, this would be a good time to do it. Keep in mind that insulation settles over time, and as it does, it becomes less effective. In addition to that, there are a number of steps consumers can take around the home, a number of low-cost and a number of no-cost steps that will add up to savings and help you to keep that bill in check. Yeah. One of it is to make sure that the HVAC system has a clean filter. If you have a dirty filter in there, it's only going to make the unit work harder than it has to. That means it's working more expensively than it has to, and that will affect you on the bill. So making sure that your filter is clean, changing it regularly or cleaning it regularly, depending on the type of unit, that's very important. Also keeping vents clean, making sure they're not blocked by furniture, rugs, or other items. Using exhaust fans sparingly. You may not realize just how quickly an exhaust fan can pull all of the warm air out of the building. And so if you have to use an exhaust fan, use it the absolute minimal amount of time that you can. And another part is ceiling fans. If you're in a room with a ceiling fan and you turn it on, make sure it's on clockwise and on a low setting. That'll actually help push the warm air back down. Of course, you want to turn the fan off when no one is in the room. But if you're in there and it's turning clockwise and slowly, that will actually help with the comfort of the room.
How about fireplaces? Not many people have them. In some homes, they may have an abundance of fireplaces. And that may be a case where it's not only using wood, but it may be using natural gas. So you've got the issue there, too. I suppose that you have to be sure that you're not wasting natural gas in your fireplace if it is fired that way.
Right. Obviously, regular maintenance of a fireplace and a chimney is very important for safety reasons. If you have a fireplace that you are not using, it's important to remember to close the damper so that you don't have yet another avenue that warm air can take to escape from the home.
Are we finding, too, that just some common sense things about making sure that the refrigerator coils are cleaned, get the vacuum down and suck the dust and things out of them, making sure the water heater is not up too high? These are all ways, obviously, you're going to save energy as well as water, in this case, if you're not using the water heater quite as much.
That's right, Chris. And not only are some of these things common sense, some of these are things that we just don't think about on a day-to-day basis. Obviously, we don't think about the coils on the back of the refrigerator. But if you pull the fridge out and you vacuum the coils off a couple of times a year, that really helps with the efficiency of the refrigerator. Another good idea is close the door of your refrigerator on a dollar bill. Give the dollar bill a tug. If it slips out easily, that means you've got loose gaskets, and guess what? You're wasting energy. It may be a very small amount, but, you know, small amounts do add up over time. Speaking of that, you know, Halloween was yesterday. We often talk about phantom power or vampire power around Halloween. That's what happens when you leave electronics plugged in when you're not using them. They will continue to use very small amounts of energy. If you unplug electronic devices when they're not being used, that's another small step that will help add up to saving money. And then, of course, you know, things like opening the curtains and blinds during the day, making sure you close them at night, and checking around windows now, see if there are any leaks or any drafts, and do the caulking and sealing. That can really help add up, too.
Well, Anthony, thank you for all these great tips to offer us as well. And if people want to see more about them, they can check out the OUCC website and find out more, right?
Right. Just go to in.gov/OUCC. We have a number of tips there. and a number of links that can help you connect with the resources.
Anthony Swinger is a spokesperson for the Indiana Office of Utility Consumer Counselors. Some advice to help save money this winter heating season, because in many cases it's here, and it's certainly not going to go away for a few more months. Thank you for being with us to talk about today, Anthony.
My pleasure, Chris. Thanks for having us on.
You're welcome. This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. Talk these days, of course, about the problems with the global supply chain, in particular global warming. We talk about a number of things that have to do with making sure that there is enough food for everybody around the world to eat, and different ways to be able to create these things that people will eat. One of these is taking advantage of an interesting vertical hydroponic agriculture. And in fact, it's right here in the region. And we're talking with a fellow who has established such a farm, Keith Kudla, who is the CFO of a place called Artesian Farm. They're located actually just across the state line in the area around New Buffalo, Michigan. And Keith, thank you for joining us on Regionally Speaking, first off.
Thank you.
Well, first tell us what Artesian Farm is all about, and in particular, how you got this thing started.
So Artesian Farm, the farm has been there. We converted an old factory building to a vertical hydroponic indoor farm. They refer to it as controlled environment agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
And we grow leafy greens and distribute all the way to Detroit, down to, over to Chicago, to northwest Indiana, and then up through Stevensville here in Michigan.
Right.
We started expanding the farm about 2 years ago, but actually the farm's been there for over 10 years now.
When you create something like this, are you basically converting a building or adding on to a building, if this is mainly indoors, to be able to give yourself the extra space to come up with the 10 acres worth of space where you can create all this great food?
Exactly. We, the warehouses or old factory buildings are perfect. Their ceilings are typically 22 feet high. We can build as high as 8 levels of plants that are growing.
Mm-hmm.
And because we're indoors and we operate 365 days a year, we're harvesting lettuce 17 times a year.
Wow.
So not only do we take advantage of the vertical plane, also we harvest 17 times a year versus outside where you're harvesting once, maybe twice a year when it comes to leafy greens.
What are some of the major advantages that vertical hydroponic agriculture has? Is it the fact you can grow more in less space, or is it more than just that?
Oh, it's more than just that.
Uh-huh.
We use 96% less land, which I described earlier how we do that, 98% less water, no pesticides, no herbicides, no fungicides. 85% of our electricity right now comes from renewable or zero carbon sources. And we're headed to 100% in that area, and there's no agricultural runoff. We don't pollute our streams and lakes with runoff from our farm because it's all indoors, and mm-hmm. we recycle the water.
Will you explain how you're able to reach that zero, or trying to reach that zero carbon footprint, which you're doing or on your way there right now, because you're taking advantage of a different power source than the grid?
Well, we're taking advantage of the grid. We located in a place where there's heavy renewable.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of hydro around here, and also we have the Cook plant about 17 miles to our north powering our grid. The next farm we build will be totally self-sufficient with wind and solar.
Now, you mentioned that you want to expand from what you have right now that's underway farming in New Buffalo, Michigan. Where's this other site that you were looking to?
Well, really, hopefully, it'll be in New Buffalo uh-huh. also. It'll just be a much bigger farm.
Oh, I see.
The farm we have now, mm-hmm. we just wanted to demonstrate that we could do it and we could make money doing it before we expand it to a farm that's 5 times the size of what we have now.
What are you able to grow right now since you have all this great space and you can do all of these different crops that in turn you can grow being indoors with a lot less land and a lot less water?
Lettuce. We grow 4 varieties of lettuce. We grow kale. We grow arugula, we grow basil. In the past, we've grown strawberries, carrots, a lot of different vegetables. But we found that it's most economical for us to do leafy greens at this point in time.
Mm-hmm. How difficult was it to get things established when you went to this style of agriculture?
For me, it was easy because mm-hmm. they already had a head start. When I showed up, they had a test farm,
oh.
and they had some customers. They had... call it 10 or 20 customers, and then we expanded to well over 100 customers all the way over to Detroit, in the geographic area that I mentioned, And so we serve all the local stores and restaurants around here, but also transport up to 250 miles away.
We're talking to Keith Kudlow, who is the CFO of Artesian Farm. They're located in the New Buffalo, Michigan area. They're a huge facility within a huge building and part of the world of vertical hydroponic agriculture. What did you seem to be doing in your life before being a farmer of sorts? Not the typical farmer, of course, but a farmer just the same. What did you do before then?
This is a complete change of career for me. I was in healthcare, and this farm, vertical farm, was right around the corner, and they were actually re-upping, so to speak, and looking for investors. And my mom's side of the family, they're all farmers, so I like to say farming's in my blood. But I just found this to be something, you know, environmentally, sustainability, it was a way to go. It seems to me it's the future of farming, especially when you look at what's going on out west, where there's no water, supply chain disruptions. You can pop up one of these farms anywhere in the country, anywhere in the world, quite frankly.
When you got things set up there at Artesian Farm and you got to expand to where you are now and growing the number of different crops that you are growing, what is the way that you were able to best market what you grew? You had to have some place for it, obviously, to go, some supermarkets or some food chain that they could slip into very easily, I would imagine.
Yeah, well, you need we have a salesperson. And actually everybody on the farm has sold at least one account going out, you know, because they know people. And so the product, to a large extent, it sells itself. For example, we showed up with our basil at a local pizza establishment, and they said, can you go get me 8 pounds right now? And now they go through 35 pounds of basil every week.
Were they a bit amazed that you could follow through on their request for 8 pounds of basil almost on the spot?
It's more art than a science to balance supply and demand. But yeah, it's a challenge, and we always try to keep extra because when we sell that account, we want to be able to start supplying them right away if we can.
I suppose probably too. Someone else, word of mouth will get around, and even though it may be a different supplier, they may want some basil too, or something very similar that you at the farm can provide.
We do get calls.
I would imagine so.
Yes, sir.
Tell us about Market Wagon. That's, I understand, a very interesting way that you're able to introduce your products to customers. And some of the Market Wagon customers, I understand, are even here in Northwest Indiana, in Maryville and in Michigan City.
Yes, they are. Market Wagon serves 7 counties in Northwest Michigan, and then the 2 counties in Michigan, Northwest Indiana, and then the 2 counties in Michigan and Southwest Michigan, Berrien, and the county to the north of us. There are, I think it's 160 farmers or local artisans that market through Market Wagon, over 1,600 products. And you can order through Market Wagon, whether you order one product or 100 products. It's a flat fee for delivery. So what all the farmers do is we deliver to a central location. It's about 10 miles from our farm. And then Market Wagon consolidates all the totes, and then they distribute them out to people's front doors, basically. One of the great things about Market Wagon is there's zero waste, because what we take to that, it's an online farmer's market, it's the best way to describe it, but what we take to Market Wagon has already been ordered. None of it goes to waste.
And we'll have a chance sometime soon to talk with the folks at Market Wagon more about their business model, which seems to be a very successful one. And I imagine in these days when it's been very difficult to get the supply chain fed, literally in this case, that it's very, very convenient for you to be able to certainly use that and for anybody, for that matter, that uses Market Wagon.
Oh, yeah. It's been a great outlet for us.
What did you have before? Did you just start out basically around the New Buffalo, Michigan area and service any customers there, and then it kind of grew on from the opportunity to sign up with Market Wagon?
Yeah, Market Wagon, I mean, that is one of our distribution chains is through Market Wagon, and we love it because it's local, very sustainable, low carbon footprint. But then we have we have delivery vehicles ourselves. We control seed to shelf or seed to table. All of our food is delivered direct to Whole Foods, Bush's, Plum, local Al's, all the restaurants and supermarkets that we deliver to.
Mm-hmm. Do you have an opportunity, besides wanting to expand into adding more space for the Artesian Farm, but to bring on some more customers in addition to using Market Wagon?
Yeah, we're at about 70% capacity right now, and, and pretty much in a break-even scenario. So we're looking to fill that other 30% of grow capacity that we have. And then we'll be on to the next farm to build a farm that we'll do it in stages, but it'll be a farm that's literally five times the size of the farm we have now.
Now, Keith, you've mentioned the fact that you got involved in this venture because you came from a farming family, did other things in life, working in healthcare, and I guess looked into, as you mentioned earlier, the opportunity for an investment, and that just turned into the fact that maybe you kind of put all these together and become a farmer of a different sort and looking into the future. And you mentioned about expansion that you want to do here. Has anyone else that you've talked to, maybe a customer or similar vendor, been interested? Maybe they've just been doing farming the traditional way or by the traditional marketing method. Have they looked into this opportunity with Market Wagon?
When I got involved, it was right before COVID. I had about 10 investors lined up, and then COVID hit. And so I ended up self-financing in the beginning. But we had, there's a lot of interest in this space.
Speaking of COVID, what kind of things have you had to do there at the farm to be able to meet all the demands of being able to deal with the pandemic?
Well, obviously our restaurant demand went to zero, but our grocery store demand went sky high. So we operated throughout COVID. We were very careful. We had protocols in place. Our employee base was very careful. We only had two people actually get COVID, felt symptoms before they came in, so they didn't come into the farm. So we were fortunate. We only had two people get COVID and at two different times. And so we were able to, work through it because you can't farm from home. And so we were able to work through it and came out the other end, quite well.
That's interesting. And I'm glad to hear that nobody seemed to be affected. At least you're doing your best to make sure that stays the same. And your own staff, all the people that help you out are doing their best to stay healthy and safe as well. And when you take a look at this whole procedure that you've gone through, has the pandemic, besides being, a downside to it, which you've mentioned, has there been a really serious, other than the sales, has there been a plus side to it?
A plus side, I don't think there's any plus side to a pandemic. Uh-huh. I just feel that we were very fortunate that we were able to work through it without any disruption. We're very fortunate, very careful.
Keith Kudla is the CFO of Artesian Farm. It's based in New Buffalo, Michigan. He has taken a career working in healthcare, and along with his family career, I turned that into become a farmer of the future by way of what is known as vertical hydroponic agriculture, a huge operation within a big building that is able to harvest and grow crops 365 days a year. Keith, thank you very much for being with us to talk about not only Artesian Farm, but about the way that you help market your product, Market Wagon, and we hope to have you back to talk again soon.
You're welcome. Thank you.
That's it for today for Regionally Speaking. On tomorrow's program, a conversation with an outdoors publication editor about a recent study done on the financial impact that national parks, and in particular the Indiana Dunes National Park, have on a region's home prices. We hope you'll join us for that.